Hello, and welcome to another podcast from Voyaging Through History, the Mayflower and Britain. We're an AHRC-funded project looking at the legacy of the Mayflower story in British history. The title of today's podcast is The Mayflower and Romanticism, and we're going to be looking at the highly intertwined history of British Romanticism and Mayflower literature over the last two centuries. So what is Romanticism? We should start really with the Romantic period. Now this is often seen as beginning around about the 1780s and leading up to the 1830s. The 1832 Great Reform Act is often given as an end point for the Romantic period. Now during this era, some of the most famous British writers in history were working, such as William Wordsworth, Samuel Taylor Coleridge, Felicia Hemans and William Blake, some of which we'll be discussing today, and these authors are thought of often as sharing some similarities. None of these writers, however, referred to themselves as romantic or would have understood the term romanticism. This was a later Victorian innovation describing what they saw as a revolution in literature. So how can we define romanticism? Well, this is a topic that scholars have debated vigorously for a number of years, but for the purposes of today's podcast, it's often seen as a reaction to the Enlightenment. So the Enlightenment was a period with an emphasis on reason, logic, empiricism, and the scientific method. It's a period of dictionaries, of encyclopedias, of journals. It wants to categorize the external world, and it wants to use systems in order to do that. In stark contrast to this highly rational and systematic way of writing about the world, the Romantics wanted to reinvigorate artistic creation with imagination, with emotion, with feelings, and with pathos. And of course, the great overriding interest of the Romantic writers is the natural world, its nature, and the environment around this. One of the best ways that we can summarize this interest is to use an example from William Wordsworth's preface to the Lyrical Ballads. So I'm just going to read for you now a very brief extract from Wordsworth, where he talks about why he's written so much poetry on people that live in a rustic or a rural environment. Humble and rustic life was generally chosen, because in that condition the essential passions of the heart find a better soil in which they can attain their maturity, are less under restraint, and speak a plainer, a more emphatic language, because in that condition of life our elementary feelings coexist in a state of greater simplicity, and consequently may be more accurately contemplated and more forcibly communicated, because the manners of rural life germinate from those elementary feelings, and from the necessary character of rural occupations, are more easily comprehended, and are more durable, and lastly, because in that condition the passions of men are incorporated with the beautiful and permanent forms of nature. Already, I think, looking at this quotation from Wordsworth, we can see why the Pilgrim Fathers, or the Brownist Separatists, to give them their proper title, might have appealed to Romantic writers. Here we have a story about people heading off into the wilderness, leaving their homes behind them, and creating an agricultural, rustic community based on faith and emotion. And of course, William Wordsworth did engage with the story of the Mayflower in his own poem, The Pilgrim Fathers, a three-sonnet sequence published in 1842. But first, I'd like to look at another author, Felicia Hemans, one of the leading writers of her period. Hemans was an English poet and literary celebrity whose immense popularity rivaled any writer of the early 19th century, even Lord Byron. In fact, she sold in far greater numbers than Wordsworth himself during this period. One of the issues of Romantic scholarship stemming really from the Victorian era is the celebration and canonicization of the male Romantic poets. So it's important to remind ourselves that the biggest literary celebrities of this period were often women, and Hemans is a good example of a female poet that was leading her generation of writers. So it was a highly significant cultural event when Hemans turned her attention to the Pilgrim Fathers in 1825. Designed to celebrate the Pilgrim Fathers as an origin myth for the United States, Hemans' verse first appeared in the New Monthly Magazine and was circulated in newspapers such as the Morning Post. The poem takes inspiration from David Webster's celebrated bicentenary oration, The Landing of the Pilgrim Fathers, which Hemans knew and referred to in her notes. Hemans's poem was a popular success in Britain and the United States. In keeping with much of Hemans's work, it is a highly romantic interpretation of the 1620 Atlantic crossing, focusing on natural imagery and personal emotion. It's a relatively short work at 10 stanzas and 4 lines each, so I'm going to do my best to recite the full poem for you, though with the caveat that poetic recital is not always my forte. So this is The Landing of the Pilgrim Fathers in New England by Felicia Hemans. The breaking waves dashed high on a stern and rock-bound coast, and the woods against the stormy sky their giant branches tossed. And the heavy night hung dark, the hills and waters o'er, when a band of exiles moored their bark on the wild New England shore. Not as the conqueror comes, they the true-hearted came, not with the roll of the stirring drums and the trumpet that sings of fame. Not as the flying come, in silence and in fear, they shook the depths of the desert gloom with their hymns of lofty cheer. Amidst the storms they sang, and the stars heard in the sea, and the sounding aisles of the dim woods rang to the anthem of the free. The ocean eagle soared from his nest by the white waves' foam, and the rocking pines of the forest roared, this was their welcome home. They were men with hoary hair amidst that pilgrim band. Why had they come to wither there away from their childhood's land? There was woman's fearless eye lit by her deep love's truth. There was manhood's brow serenely high, and the fiery heart of youth. What sought they thus afar? Bright jewels of the mine, the wealth of the seas, the spoils of war? They sought a faith's pure shrine. Aye, call it holy ground, the soil where they first trod. They have left unstained what there they found, freedom to worship God. Now, there's a lot going on in this poem, and some of these aspects I really love, particularly the dark and heavy night, which combined with the imagery of a desolate rock-bound coast set against breaking waves and a stormy sky, edges close to high Gothic melodrama. Glenn O'Mans has commented that modern readers may find Hemans's expression bombastic, but contemporaries were charmed. This is certainly the case for The Landing of the Pilgrim Fathers. American audiences in particular were receptive to the poem's description of colonists and their religious mission, and schoolchildren were frequently taught to memorise the poem well into the 20th century. I particularly like the recollection of the author James Albert Michener, recollecting his early experiences of poetry in his 1991 memoir, The World Is My Home. Michener recalls that starting as a lad in primary school, I was required to learn traditional poems selected by enthusiastic and patriotic teachers. I learned the verse with such tenacity that they reverberate in my memory, the breaking waves dashed high on a stern and rock-bound coast. So here's a poem from the early 19th century in Britain that went on to have a remarkable afterlife in America. Indeed, it went on to inform the cultural memory of the Mayflower in both countries. There's a number of reasons for this, and one of them I'm going to argue is that the romantic elements of the poem are integral to creating this captivating image of a band of faithful but emotional, proud and diligent pilgrims. The pilgrims are described as a noble band of exiles who arrive in America not as the conqueror that comes for the trumpet that sings of fame, but rather to sound the anthem of the free and appeal to America's sense of liberty and its national identity. Indeed, Hemans contrasts the pilgrims with mercantile colonialists. They do not seek the bright jewels of the mine, the wealth of the seas, or the spoils of war. Instead, there is a spiritual enterprise for a people seeking only the freedom to worship God. And underpinning all of this, really, is the pathos and the emotion of a poem about people that have left their childhood's land, come to a stern and rock-bound coast on the wild New England shore. It's these sentimental and romantic elements that really make the poem come alive for its readers. Romanticism is really the vehicle that Hemans uses to create this highly successful poem, and it's designed to appeal to Americans' sense of national identity and their sense of the past. America is less than 50 years old as a state at this time, so they're looking for origin stories or narratives by which they can define themselves. And here's a British romantic author using a very romantic poem to offer America a sense of its own self, a sense of its past. And from this perspective, the poem really worked. It was highly successful. You often find it recited at celebrations for the American Declaration of Independence, for example. Moreover, American poet Lydia Sigourney, herself referred to as the American Hemans, commented that the verses were so well known that they could be heard from the storm-beaten rock where they landed to the gulf where the Floridian orange grove and the magnolia mingle their perfumes, from the sounding shores of the Atlantic to the lone wilds of the Oregon. Literary scholar Gary Kelly has commented that the landing of the Pilgrim Fathers became virtually a national anthem and had a very large influence on the emergent national culture from the public to the private sphere. Romanticism, of course, has played a very large role in the creation of national identity and national feeling, and Hemans was really a leading light in creating poems that could appeal to Scottish, English, Welsh, and American forms of national feeling that were emergent at this time. So from this perspective, we can see how intertwined the growth of popularity of the Mayflower story is with the beginnings and the development of Romanticism in the United States. This leads us on, of course, to a figure we have already addressed, William Wordsworth, who late in life turned his attention to the very same story that Hemans had looked at two decades before. Aspects of Christianity in America, The Pilgrim Fathers, is a three-sonnet sequence which first appeared in Wordsworth's 1842 publication, Poems Chiefly of Early and Late Years. Although very seldom looked at by literary scholars, I believe this poem to be quite a important example of Wordsworth's later poetry. The first sonnet is an elegiac tribute to the Pilgrim Fathers and proclaims the men well worthy to be magnified for their accomplishment. Wordsworth overtly romanticises the story of the Pilgrims. There is a clear focus on the emotions felt by the travellers for their loved abodes and the hallowed grounds which their fathers lay. They leave England with sad hearts and offer a last farewell for their friends and country. Their home is forsook in exchange for a newfound world and some sheltering nook which they may worship in freedom. The second sonnet begins with a celebration of the independent spirit of the Pilgrims who fled from rites and ordinance abused into the wild where they were both utterly unknown. However, the second sonnet eventually sees the colonists return to the English religious community from which they had left. Wordsworth writes how the Pilgrims by conscience governed their steps retrace and they complete a journey back to the land they left of yore. The sonnet closes triumphantly with concord and charity, shown to be transcendent over time. The third and final sonnet completes the reunification. Wordsworth writes how filial love and apostolic light have achieved a new Christian unity in the 19th century. The sonnet then imagines future connections where remotest lands and unborn time shall turn back to England's church. The Pilgrims are praised for the rejuvenating and unifying spirit of Christianity brought back to England. This is where Wordsworth's poems differ most starkly from Hemans, as he encourages us to think about a theme of reunification. And this theme of reconciliation and healing was something Wordsworth was keenly interested in at the time. As Stephen Gill notes, his last separate volume of poetry, Poems Chiefly of Early and Late Years, was presented in 1842 as a contribution to social healing. The Pilgrim Fathers can be read as a work keenly invested in social healing, not just in Britain, but between the United States and the United Kingdom, helping to heal the rupture between the two nations that had lasted since the American War of Independence. In this way, Wordsworth's poem anticipates the role the Mayflower story would play in Anglo-American diplomacy over the later 19th and 20th century. Again, Romanticism plays a key role here in what Wordsworth is trying to achieve. This is a narrative of exile, a narrative of emotion, a story of being lost in the wilderness, and a hope for reconciliation. These are all key elements of the Mayflower story which have lasted until the present day. And to give an impression of this lasting influence of Romanticism on the Mayflower story, I'd like to turn to a 1911 text by English author Albert Christopher Addison called The Romantic Story of the Mayflower Pilgrims. The title is appropriate. Illustrated extracts from both Wordsworth and Hemans and their respective verses adorn the opening and closing pages of the work. This is a work of popular non-specialist history. Addison invites us as readers to place ourselves next to the Pilgrims as they stand on board ship observing a strange new world. He imagines with what wandering awe and mingled hopes and fears the Pilgrims looked out over the sea upon a strange new world with its great stretch of wild wooded coast and panorama of rock and dune and scrub, its wintry bay and its frowning headland, to which destiny and the worn white wings of the Mayflower together had brought them. Addison's narrative makes overt use of natural imagery, emotion, inspiration, and individual bravery, displaying its indebtedness to Romanticism in its prose as much as its title. As Addison retells the story, frequent asides make his indebtedness to Romanticism all the more explicit. He says things such as, "This is the story of the Mayflower Pilgrims, romantic, heroic, idyllic, based upon the principles which have moulded and maintained a mighty free nation. Its place in life today is honoured and conspicuous, and rests upon the rock of people's gratitude." Or consider, for example, Addison's choice of language when he describes sitting in the Boston jail cell in Lincolnshire where the Pilgrims sat many centuries before. Alone in the Pilgrim's cell, what thoughts this situation kindles, how eagerly the imagination shapes and clothes them. What scenes this mouldy atmosphere unfolds, the very solitude is eloquent with pious reminiscence. The void is filled again, people with those spectres of an imperishable past, their prayers and praise fall on the listening ear, a soft appeal for grace and strength, the lulling notes of a rough psalmody, then again dreams and visions of the night. The language here would not be out of place in an early 19th century romantic novel, and this is something that Addison is clearly gesturing towards. This is because Addison is very consciously looking back at over a century of romantic influence on the Mayflower narrative, with specific regard to British Romanticism, to construct a saleable text of popular history for both the British and American market. As we approach the quadcentenary of the founding of New Plymouth, it's appropriate that we examine the vital contribution Romanticism has made towards one of the defining national myths of the modern world. Romantic retellings of the Mayflower story by British authors such as Hemans, Wordsworth and even Addison have had a transformative effect on what was once historically known as the Brownist emigration. Indeed, until the late 18th century, the emigration of these Brownist separatists was a minor historical footnote in the settlement of North America, without a significant purchase on popular culture in Britain or America. What Hemans and later authors are able to do using the tools that Romanticism provides is create a story rich in emotion, pathos, bravery, and fortitude. The beautiful yet threatening natural imagery of New England provides the perfect backdrop for this story. Far from home, and without tools and resources necessary for survival, somehow these men and women manage to found a new nation. This is, of course, highly ahistorical, to put it mildly, but this isn't the reason the story has power. The reason the story has been so effective over the century is different authors, such as those we've discussed today, have managed to retool and reconfigure the story to suit their own needs. And as I've hopefully argued today, Romanticism, I believe, has played an incredibly important role in the way the story has been told and retold over the centuries. And thank you for listening. If you'd like any more detail on the project that we're involved with, you can have a look at our website, which is www.voyagingthroughhistory.exeter.ac.uk.